Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, November 27th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. You know, as always, I'm very glad to be here, especially tonight with our special guest.
Oh, it's going to be a good one. And as always, I'm so happy to have you joining me. And of course, I'm happy to have those in the live chat joining us. We always appreciate your contributions. And thanks to those that catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. As always, we're going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And finally, 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So you are absolutely right. We have a great program tonight. We are joined by Dr. Rick Teleska. We're going to be discussing aliens and the zoo hypothesis. So welcome.
Thanks, Dr. Michael. It's great to be here again. It's always interesting.
I know we had...
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I'd like to remind folks who Rick is, Dr. Rick, if I may, because you've got quite an extensive background in some of what we're going to talk about tonight. So just for those folks who are new to Dr. Rick Teleska and for those in the archives who are listening, he's been an investigator and student of the UFO phenomenon for over 50 years, and you've worked with all kinds of organizations, Rick. I know that. You've completed over 500 investigations, and you've been a consultant to investigators in data, photo, and video analysis. That's because you have a degree in computer science research and development, and the list is very long, folks. But under your name, R.J. Teles, pen name, you're also the author of the controversial book, and it is controversial, I must say, but for other reasons, The Final Revelation, The Sun Project, which I have read, I really enjoyed it, based on the actual experience of individuals who served for many years in the military, intelligence organizations, and senior positions, and positions that have provided access to one of the most closely guarded secrets in the history of mankind. I love that. But you're currently working on establishing the Center for Theoretical Exoscience and Exomythology. And before I don't know how good of a segue this is into our topic tonight, but can you give us a clue about what that is?
Well, basically exoscience is anything that's not of this earth. So it would be UFOs. It might be paranormal. But we're also looking into the fact that the UFO phenomenon probably is the modern era mythology. That's very quickly going from mythology to science or to reality. And there's a few people that I had been working with, and what we're going to try and do is draw all those parallels and then maybe look backwards at mythology and say maybe it wasn't exactly what we thought it was. Maybe there was more science to it.
Well, archaeology is revealing all kinds of stuff now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's part of it. I think archaeology, in my mind, for the longest time, there was a certain amount of, they would have to guess, okay? We don't really know, but this is what we're guessing. And also, they're finding things that they were guessing at, and they don't like the answer, but they can't ignore what the answer might really be, mm-hmm. especially when you get into some of the ancient astronaut stuff. So it was kind of an interpretive, I don't even want to call it interpretive science, but yeah, we'd look at something and it always came out to be religion. It must be religion. And maybe it wasn't always religion. Maybe it wasn't always a religious base for some of the myths that we had. Maybe it was, you know, they described what they saw and the science of the time, just like now, maybe couldn't understand it or define it.
Well, I'm looking forward to your thoughts on the zoo hypothesis, because I have heard of this before, but for our audience, maybe you could give us a generalized explanation and, you know, what we think we could be looking at.
Well, you know, it's something that's not terribly new. I heard of this all the way back in the 70s and 80s, but the zoo hypothesis suggests that there's an intelligent race out there that studies us. And they study us very subtly, very covertly. They can see us, but we've learned little about them. Their disguise is so effective that a lot of people even doubt they exist. And for some people, even that thought is pretty unsettling. A year or so ago, there was a paper came out by physicist James Benford, and he called them lurkers. Mm. And he was talking about in the field of physics, there was more and more interest in this topic that a lot of people believe that this could actually exist. And, you know, when I was doing work for the government, I met all kinds of people, because the type of work that we were doing was called special access projects, mm-hmm. which meant that we could see certain things if we needed to see it. But what that did also is put us in contact with other people who could see things that we couldn't. And as I got to know some of these people over the years, you know, they would talk about certain things. And one of the things that I did learn, and this was somebody from the Defense Intelligence Agency. And if you don't know, the Defense Intelligence Agency are basically, they're responsible for all our satellites, among other things. And they told me that allegedly there are files that do indicate there are alien satellites orbiting Earth, and that NASA and the military are engaged in kind of a cover-up regarding the existence and the origin of this material. Now, I don't think they know the origin, but that's what I was told. And, it's interesting. It's like you mentioned the book. I know towards the end the book gets kind of weird, but that's what I was told. That's exactly what I was told. And the other interesting thing there was I listened to all these people now testifying before Congress, and they say how they're afraid to say certain things. Yeah, so were the people I spoke to. But anyway, they're saying that this does exist. And, you know, people kind of, you know, question that a little bit, but you need to know that there's over 34,000 pieces of space junk out there that are 10 centimeters or larger. That's 4 inches. And there's millions that are smaller. Okay. Oof. So, you know, what I was told or what they believed is that you know, the ETs have hidden small orbiting surveillance platforms among the space junk and disguised them as space debris.
I had a science friend of mine who traveled the world and worked for lots of countries, who was, every picture he ever took had UFOs in it. He has a whole big scrapbook full of stuff he wouldn't show very many people. But when the internet started, one of the things he said is, well, how else can they track our DNA? You know, when all the Ancestry.com and so on, and everybody putting in their DNA, but also activity on the internet, he said, they're watching.
You know, it's interesting that if you watch a lot of the movies with aliens in them, there's a theme in there where they were watching us first.
Yeah.
Whether it be Hangar 18 or The Day the Earth Stood Still or Close Encounters, it all started with them watching, which is interesting. Now, another thing, less than a year ago, I don't know if you remember who Sean Kirkpatrick is. He was the former head of AARO, All Domain and Alibi Research Office.
Okay.
he got together with Dr. Avi Loeb from Harvard, the Oumuamua guy, and they wrote a paper, and they said they think it's very possible that alien spacecraft, however we might define them, can fly through our solar system or whatever and deposit probes. And they called these probes dandelion seeds. And that they could just disperse them, and they could very slowly go through even our atmosphere without burning up or doing anything, because that's the way their technology could work. And I thought that was interesting because NASA has talked about that some of our newest probes on Mars could actually be the size of grains of sand. So here we have this parallel technology discussion where people say, oh, no, that can't be. And then we turn around and say, well, wait a minute. We're thinking about doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So that always kind of pulls me back. Now, something else that somebody was telling me is that as they look more and more at Oumuamua, and they don't really know what the shape was, but they're starting to get a better idea, and I think that it was tapered. And then one idea came up is this possible this is an ancient worn obelisk that is kind of traveling through space?
But we're talking about more than one species of aliens, though, aren't we, also?
Well, there are more than one species. Now, what I was told is at one time there were more than one species that would visit here. Not like the Jetsons. It's not like you get in your spacecraft and you come. It was state-sponsored. But I was also told at one point one particular species took control. One species who was more benign than the others and said, no, this is our territory now. For what reasons? You know, we could discuss that later. And that they kind of warn off other species who may have more malicious intent. Now, is any of that true? I don't know. The people I spoke with, I trust them with my life, and they had no reason to tell me anything different. I asked them. They didn't really come to me. So,
That also be in relation to the theory at a time where humans were like the slaves to aliens?
Mm-hmm. You know, that could be possible. That's not something I've really thought a lot about or looked a lot about it. But, you know, again, I keep coming back. I think I mentioned this once before. If you look at human beings on Earth, what do we contribute to the life cycle of the Earth?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at all the animals. Anything from a one-celled creature to the ugliest thing at the bottom of the ocean, they do something, and they're not parasitic. Where we, as we said, as, you know, Dr. Doug said one time, is we take from the woodpile, but we don't seem to be giving any back.
Yeah.
Good point.
So the point is, do we belong here, or were we put here for some reason? Which we still don't know.
Well, nearly all indigenous cultures believe that whatever you take from nature, you have to replace it with something. It's just, as we've developed, we got kind of selfish. You know, we've lost that.
Yeah, we definitely have in the industrial age.
Well, and you know, we talk about, are they watching us? Are they listening to us? And that was another thing that I found interesting, because I'd heard this so many times. You know, over 50, 55 years, when you hear the stories from different people, from different places that might have a need or situation where they would know, and they're saying the same thing, you start to say, well, wait a minute, maybe that does make sense. But what I was told a number of times is that these aliens can intercept and process our thought just as like it was transmitted via radio or Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can pick up that information. Maybe it's electromagnetic field. Maybe it's not. And people say, oh, that's kind of crazy. Well, is it? Because DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, they have evidence, and they've been doing evidence that shows that actually humans can do this using the electromagnetic field. We have things like radio bio. We have the neural dust stuff experiments that they've done. And then you have Elon Musk with Neuralink. So not
that's
only
a scary thought.
It is. And not only can they interpret our thoughts, but they have unrestricted access to our electronic information grid in the same way. And again, Neuralink is proof of that. And we also have human body communications. We have different things that we can use. And it all kind of taps into electromagnetic field. So are we being watched? Are we being listened to? There's nothing really, I don't know what they'd be listening to me for. There's not a lot to hear. But, you know, is that possible?
Do you find it alarming or unnerving that we could be being watched, that thought?
No, and the reason for that is it's been going on for so long. If they haven't done anything now, why would I expect anything to happen? I don't.
Totally.
I mean,
yeah.
And again, like I heard, and I said it in the book, if they wanted to shut this down, it could happen in an instant.
Yep.
So, and that scared my wife. That scared my wife. But the other thing I do want to mention is, and we talked about this once before, and you even mentioned it, maybe it was the last time or whatever, is the telepathic coupling.
Yeah.
Where they can connect and they can see as we see, feel as we feel, hear as we hear. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing more evidence in science that that's actually possible.
Well, that's certainly my experience that I don't talk to many people about. Is that, and understanding something, though, I don't know how to explain this. Aliens don't necessarily speak English or speak a particular language, but they can tap into how we interpret thoughts and the language we give it. Does that make sense?
I think it absolutely does. I mean, one example that we could have in a similar is music.
Yes.
A lot of us can't read music or write music, but we can tell from a song if it's positive, if it's happy or sad.
Mm-hmm.
That's a communication. I think people have to be open to really what's going on. We're entering a time when I think we are going to learn some new stuff. I don't think we're going to learn it from the from the government. But I think we're going to start to learn some new things.
Go ahead, Michael.
Oh, I was just going to say it's only a matter of time, I would think, until either humanity doesn't continue or we get to the point where we'd be able to kind of engage in contact, you know, with these people eventually, because 1,000 years is nothing geologically or in the span of Earth's history. You know, how much time is it going to take? How many millennia do you think until we could engage with these people that are observing or these different aliens?
I don't think it's going to take long myself. What do you think, Rick?
Well, I think, yeah, I'm trying to figure out what would be the tipping point for them. What would be that point when they say, okay, we better talk to these people now. We need to make that contact. Would there be a reason for that? Or will they just let us, you know, go our own way? You know, I've heard it said that extraterrestrial life form considers our thoughts to be dangerous. And they wouldn't want that type of energy going throughout the universe. So if it gets too prevalent or too possible, they end it. They say, this is it. If, in fact, we might be the byproduct of an alien race, do they feel responsible for what they created?
Well, I'm of the thought, and I go by the law of non-interference, unless it affects me. And my way of thinking is that they're much the same. Unless it affects them or their evolution or their home base that might be on this planet, maybe underwater, then they stay out of it. Because what we do to ourselves is kind of up to us, unless, of course, it threatens their existence, such as, i.e., nuclear power, you know, that could harm them and their evolution. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, and that's something that, you know, suddenly occurred to me when I was taking courses, is, you know, I've heard since the, you know, 70s or whatever, they look at our nuclear proliferation, and they're saying, well, they're going to protect us from ourselves. Okay, that sounded nice for a while, but wait a minute. Let's think of something different. Quantum theory, quantum physics suggests something different, and that's quantum entanglement.
Mm.
If what we're doing here with nuclear power and nuclear weapons is it possible that when we make a bang here, it's making a bang somewhere else, maybe on their home planet, maybe in a different dimension?
Yep.
And if that gets too out of control, they need to stop it. They need to put an end to it. And that to me makes more sense. Self-preservation makes more sense to me than the more philanthropic is it or whatever is they're going to protect us from ourselves, which would make sense if then we were either related to them in some way or we were a product from them in some way. Then it would make sense to kind of protect us.
Well, now there's another theory that they are us in a past, that they've come from a future. If not, I guess I could find better words for that, but that there is a race that is in the future that's come back to kind of help us out because it helps them in the future.
Yeah, and that's a possibility too. There's, you know, all of a sudden nothing is too weird anymore. I want to address one comment made here by Damien. We were put here, our evolution makes no sense. That's a great comment because a couple of the scientists who are on the Human Genome Project, when they measured our human genome and they looked at the amount of time that humans were on Earth with that genome, there wasn't enough time based on the way they saw the genome change for it to begin here on Earth. Like 300,000 years for the human as we know it. It took longer than that for the genome to develop, so it had to come from somewhere else. These are some scientists from the Human Genome Project.
Mm.
So that's an interesting question, too.
Well, something I was told maybe 40-some years ago is that a lot of the organs that we think we can live without are actually the ones that we are growing into. You know, you can live without a spleen. You can live without a kidney. You can live without, you know, a gallbladder. And I know they all have functions, but these are things like tonsils. But really what we're growing into and evolving as a species is a higher vibration of those organs. And, you know, I just filed that information to say, you know, that is an interesting concept, that a lot of things we think we can live without, but really we haven't used them to their full potential.
And you know, I think that's a very possible thing, very real. I mean, we've seen that actually in other species where things have happened that way. One other thing I wanted to mention, which is kind of goes along with this, and this was really interesting to me because I had heard the term before. I had heard, you know, some people call them code words. They're actually called keywords or key control words. But the term mutts. And I had gone through some paperwork, and I saw the word mutt. And it's like, oh, what the heck is that? And somebody goes, oh, don't worry about it. Okay, so I'm not going to worry about it. Usually when somebody said don't worry about it, basically means either don't ask about it or don't worry about it. But mutt, when I talked to one of these other guys, he said, this is a population of what they call biologically engineered human facsimiles.
Oh.
Okay, and they're, again, observers. And they're long-term residents on Earth, and – what he was telling me is they don't know the number of this population, but that they're virtually indistinguishable from humans and almost impossible to track down. Okay, that was interesting because I heard the term mutt before. I saw the keyword or code control word mutt. Fine. Then, though, I heard from a former flight surgeon who, after his service with the Air Force, was in Los Angeles. He was a trauma room doctor. And he told the story how this person came in one time, had been injured in a car accident. And he apparently knew all about mutts somehow. He didn't really go into how he did. And he said when he started to examine this person, he knew exactly what it was the minute he saw it. And some of the other people involved were a little confused by what they were seeing. Although it looked completely human, there were some things there which he didn't explain to me. Didn't look human. So this mutt passed away. And when it was done, apparently all the people who were working on this were told to leave the room, And we're going to have some other people take care of this. Oh. And his long story short was that eventually they were told that it was this person was a spy or something to that effect, and that's why the body was taken away and so on and so forth and whatever. And there's more to the story. I'm just not going to go through it. And he was convinced that that's what he had seen.
So what was the difference, the biological difference that he recognized? Do you know?
He goes, everything was almost perfect for the age. He goes, when you look at it, he goes, it shouldn't, you know, doctors know when they look at lungs or whatever, at a certain age, they should look a certain way. But he said everything looked like it was brand new.
Oh.
Like there was never any aging. He said the brain was definitely different. He goes, because, you know, they hooked all the stuff up and before the thing passed away, and they were seeing things and they thought it was the equipment. But it didn't live long enough for, I guess, some of the other people that were working there to really catch on that it wasn't the equipment. I mean, you could talk an hour about what he had to say.
Yeah.
So, but he said, I'm just seeing things that just weren't possible. And then based on his experience with the Air Force, he said that's immediately what came to mind to me.
Wow. So it makes perfect sense to me that if this is an alien home base and we in whatever form evolved, whether a product of multiple alien species and hybrids or whatever, that we have naturally been watched. Just makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're doing the same thing. You know how many probes we have out there circling planets, circling the moons of other planets, and we're just looking. Look at Voyager. It's way out there, and all it's doing is looking around. So we do the same thing. We do it on Earth. We have spy mm-hmm. satellites flying over us all the time.
Well, and
we
anthropologists,
to
too.
Mm-hmm. We do it to animals all the time. It's like we keep zoos.
We do, like, but not just animals. We also examine different human societies. You know, not as yeah. much in the modern age, but in the kind of dark times of the 19th century, there were a lot of Europeans that would go and too often interfere, but they would do the same thing with other human different societies and things like that.
Well, I think we do study ourselves. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, basic sociology or psychology is what colors influence a hospital, what colors influence a jail, what colors, you know, and what kind of ambience do you create, you know, to create a particular psyche or mood. You know, I think we do study ourselves in a lot of ways. And we try to implement that, and it would just make sense. Okay, so, I mean, you know, let's just say for the sake of argument, aliens do exist, because I know there's a lot of people that don't believe it. I do, but we do. And it would just make sense, then, that in the observation of what we are doing to ourselves, how we are interacting, and maybe there is some influence here and there. I wonder about the people who can see things and people who can't, because there's some people who, you know, in their psyche, you know, think about hypnosis, positive and negative hallucinations. You could see a ship, but your brain has no frame of reference for that, so you're not going to say, oh, that's a spaceship. You know, you could have seen one, but you don't have that in your brain. And so if then again the opposite is true, you know, a positive hallucination is, oh, I'm seeing spaceships when it was just a drone or a meteor or something, or a fly on your lens. You know, I mean,
well, I think that's the whole basis of the ancient astronaut theory, is they were seeing things, they just didn't have the words to describe it.
Yeah.
And Dr. Mike, I like what you said here. It's genetic code. It's improbable to have risen purely by random chance. I'd say it's impossible to be random. I just don't see that. It's just, you know, and as far as believing in aliens, there's a trillion galaxies out there, a trillion galaxies, which means there's hundreds of trillions of stars, which means there's hundreds of trillions of planets around them. There's got to be one. You know, I mean, I figure all they got to do is go to AAA and find their way here. You know, we're good.
Well, I tell you, if they look like spiders and they come in my house, they get swatted. That's all I know. Spiders are not allowed in my house.
Well, you know, I was watching, I hate spiders. I was watching TV the other day, and you know, I was watching this 4K channel because I think it's cool, but it was undersea, and some of the things that are undersea, they are creepy looking and scary.
Yes.
But then it occurs to me is how do we know that it isn't what people out in the space look like? They could look like the same thing. So,
you know,
Star Trek.
No, absolutely. And thank you for bringing that up because it's a great segue. I have to relate everything to pop culture because that's just who I am. And a few times I've been thinking about Next Generation. In the pilot, they meet a being called Q who has immense power. And he's come to humanity because they can see what we will be in the future. And I think about that a little bit in our discussion on this, zoo hypothesis. The other thing that's been kind of in my mind in, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly, the Kardashev scale, the level of technological and societal development where you can, in level one, harness the energy on your planet, level two, harness the energy of a star, level three, harness the energy of a galaxy. You know, if we're talking about beings that are much more advanced, at what scale are they? Are they harnessing stars, galaxies? Do they have an interest in us only because of our future potential? Or, you know, where are they at in that?
And we haven't even reached level one on
True.
The scale. Because a level one civilization can also control things like volcanoes and the energy on their planet, which we can't. Okay? So we're not even to level one. And if you think about that, if you go to quantum physics – and you say at the lowest level we could actually change the molecular structure of something, then theoretically we could control a volcano by changing the magma into solid rock. So I mean, I don't know that we could do that, but at least that's how maybe they do it. But yeah, on the Kardashev scale, we're really not even there yet. And they talk about the Dyson spheres when they're talking about a level two, where they might build something around a star. That's hard to even conceptualize.
Oh, and the resources needed. I mean, to build something on such a massive scale, that is a big reason why I'm wondering, you know, at what point will we really break on to the galactic, you know, community? Do we need to be able to harness the power of a star? Maybe not just through a Dyson sphere where you can build a structure around a star and harness that energy, but even just through other devices that can more readily harness the power of our own star, let alone neighboring stars and the like.
So I have a question in the zoo hypothesis, if I may ask, and such things as cattle mutilations, and I know it's not exclusive to cattle, but could that be part of the observing and
I
study?
I don't see why. Why not just take the whole thing?
I agree.
I know that in the very beginning, after World War II, and in some of those years, that some of this was done, not by, but for Japanese ranchers. They love beef, and they didn't have beef. So they wanted to get material. They wanted to study the beef that we had here, and they would hire people to go out and do this. We also know some of it's cult, and some of it I don't know. But my question would be is, why leave it? If you can get here to do this and you've come a zillion miles, you can't just take the whole cow and nobody would notice? unless you want somebody to notice.
Who would do that? I mean, think about the precision, and again, no blood. The list is long for those who know about mutilations.
Yeah.
How could that possibly be done?
Well, I've heard different stories, like certain cults do blood draining, but I don't know. That's the ones that, you know, that confuse me. And I haven't done a lot with that. But sometimes, you know, what impresses me is when a veterinarian doesn't really understand what's going on here. But again, it still clashes with, why do you just take pieces unless you want somebody to notice? And then if you want somebody to notice, why do you want somebody to notice? And that would, in my mind, be an experiment. I want to see why they notice and how they respond.
Damien's saying in the chat, I think cows are being studied to see the effects of radiation on a living organism. I know that's way out in left field, but
well, and,
Go ahead.
Well, I think it's a French thing. They want to get rid of the cows. And they're going to put a tax on cows. No, who was it that's going to do that? Is that Dutch? I don't know. But here's the thing. That might be. What I keep coming back to is if they can do these other things, and I believe they can, see as we see, feel as we feel, hear as we hear, they can get all that information without doing this. And if they're so far in the future, don't they already know the impact of radiation?
Well, and I think about human abduction stories. I mean, I don't think I was abducted, so let's start there. But a lot of stories about having been experimented on. And, you know, for those who are here, you all know the stories, I'm sure. You're right, taking the whole being up and, you know, studying the biology, returning them, kind of makes sense.
Well, here's the thing I keep running into with that, and I believe more in contact than abduction.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been involved in a lot of abduction studies. I didn't do them personally. I kind of observed. And there's a couple of things. First of all, they're really, really hard to do because of all the things that could cause an abduction experience. I mean, everything from a bad meal to ibuprofen to you name it. But here's the problem I've always had, and these people that I worked with had the same problem, is why during all these abductions, going all the way back to Betty and Barney Hill, and I know all about that story and what happened,
yeah.
Why is it that the aliens are always using technology of the time?
Hmm.
Okay, so they're using these invasive probes. What, they never watched Star Trek? They don't have MRIs. They don't have ultrasound in the future or wherever they came from. That, to me, tells me that somebody's describing something. Now, you do hear some people say they waved the wand over me. That would make sense because that could be electromagnetic. It could be ultrasound or whatever. But they're saying they're using a needle or they're doing this. Why would they need to do that? And if they're on Earth with us, and I've heard they work in the medical field, whatever, they can get any information they want right where they're working, unless the person is particular.
Damien says tricorder. Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Okay. You know, I got my communicator right here.
There you go. You know, it was an interesting idea, and I've heard it before, but I hadn't really thought about it in a while, this idea that one alien species has kind of claimed Earth, either for benevolent reasons for observation and to keep other dangerous ones at bay, or just for selfish reasons, I don't know. But, you know, a lot of the ways in which we're seeing evidence and the different variety there, it always struck me that there's multiple, you know, concurrent, like, you know, why are they leaving the cow? Why are others doing this, that, and the other? It could just be that different aliens are coming to investigate different things for different purposes. That's kind of always been the thing that makes the most sense to me. But
and that absolutely may be possible because, like what I was told, there's one particular group, but the others sneak in from time to time and do what they do. You know, I don't know.
Maybe that's why they have to leave the cow because they're in a hurry. They got to get out of there before the Grays see them.
Yeah, or they had the small ship. They couldn't get the big one today.
Right.
You know, maybe they just look at him and say, don't. I don't know. Those are all great questions, and that's what makes us interesting. We can't answer any of these questions because our science isn't there. We just can't get there.
What do you feel or know or think about the RHO negative and it being a hybrid blood type?
All I know is they can't really explain it. And anytime it can't be explained and – you're telling me what it isn't, but you don't know what it is. That doesn't make sense, right?
And for those who don't – sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, for those who don't know about RHO negative, the O negative, every blood type has a protein contained in some other organism on Earth except the RHO negative. It does not contain a certain protein that is relatable to anything on Earth. It is compatible – for all other blood types, but no other blood type can give to an RHO negative. So that's just a really brief synopsis about it.
Are they mutts? I don't know.
Well, I am RHO negative. That's why I've been studying it for years. No, I mean, oddly enough, and there's, what, less than 5% of the human population is, I think it might be up to 7 now for the billions on Earth. But, you know, with that small percentage of people on Earth with that blood type, and what's so strange to me is the majority of the people I know are O negative. And I say, are we supposed to know each other? Like, so it's a pretty crazy thing. And of course, the Anunnaki is a theory. Sitchin talked about it. Dr. Damien says, wow, Dr. Vic, you really are special. I'm sorry, you have to laugh at that one. But the O negative blood type claiming to be, you know, again, the claims, I don't know, but that's the living proof of a hybrid. That's what people claim to be. I mean,
you know, it's an interesting idea. We've gone into this before. I think it's been maybe a couple years. Not a bad idea for a future topic, too, to get into that. But, you know, I've always pretended I have the best blood type. I'm A positive or A plus, as I like to say. You know, that's the highest grade you can get. But apparently these RHO negative is even better than that. Who knew?
Oh, competing now, are we? I don't know. I just wondered about that as we were talking, Rick, because Dr. Mike is explaining a couple of things in the chat. He said the rhesus negative refers to a specific blood type classification based on the presence or absence of the rhesus factor, a protein found in the surface of red blood cells. And he also says the Rh factor is inherited. Yes, it is. If a person lacks the Rh factor, they are Rh negative. This is a recessive trait, meaning both parents must pass the Rh gene for the child to be Rh. And all my kids are RHO negative. And my grandkids are RHO negative. So it's, in other words, we can only, I'm being crass, but we can only breed with certain people. And it's very common for women who have, you know, the negative Rh factor to have many miscarriages, particularly with, you know, someone who's of a non-compatible blood type. And so the people who are RHO negative and that blood type is very specific to know who it wants to breed with. And that's, to me, what's so fascinating about it. Why does this particular blood type, you know, it's very prejudiced about who it lets in, you know, and that's why it kind of leans in the direction of, you know, is that a hybrid blood type? It could it be?
It's interesting.
Because it's bonkers.
You know, that's interesting because are they the future people? Or are they the past people? Is that where we're going? Or is that where we came from? And probably makes for an interesting first date conversation.
We got the wrong blood type mix. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Take a testing kit with you to the first date.
So Dr. Mike is saying in the chat, globally around 15% of people are Rh negative now. You see, we're a growing species. But that, you know, again, I think in a week we went from 7 to 8 billion people. You know, we think about how much the human population has grown since the 1900s. It's astronomical.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
You know, how it this explosion of human beings on the Earth. And, I mean, there's lots of ways to explain that, the least of which is medicine and science. But, you know, how does that factor in to us being kind of, I know it sounds bonkers, but in a zoo?
Well, you know, subjects.
I'm listening, you know, as we listen to all this and you think, is the whole, you know, Marvel X-Men so unbelievable at this point? Is that possibly a future? who knows? But I do think, I mean, in terms of being watched, I think we are. And I think maybe, or the question that most bothers people whenever I talk about this is why? Why are we being watched? All right? So intellectual curiosity, pre-contact preparation, self-preservation on their part. What do they want?
I would say self-preservation to me is at the top, but that's just my thought.
I don't know.
Go ahead, Michael.
I was just saying, if you have a species so advanced, I think it might just be more curiosity or just watching the development, like we might watch a different species that's developing along a similar track to ourselves. It's maybe watching us to better understand themselves. Is there kind of an evolutionary, there's a term for this, but it's not coming to my mind, where, you know, different places can have similar species because of the natural rhythms of evolution and the things that drive it, even if it is guided perhaps. But I think curiosity, when you get to that level, I think curiosity still has a big part to play. But then again, when you don't know, you don't know. And that's why the most interesting questions to ask are always the ones that don't have definitive answers.
Are they watching their creation to see what happens to it?
But we're really violent.
Maybe they were too in their past before they obtained, you know, intergalactic travel.
Well, that's always been my argument in terms of are we not the children of God, but the children of God? I went to Catholic schools and all that. I still got, you know, the marks from the nuns and things like that. But, you know, one thing I always remembered, and you hear it all the time, you hear it every day, is that we were created in God's image. And if that's the case, and I'm talking about the big God, the big G, the grand architect, whatever you want to say, excuse me, if that's the case, then whoever that is must be really flawed. Because we are. On the other hand, if we were created by something just short of that, who might make mistakes, or like Dr. Mike said, is trying to predict their development based on experiments, seeing how things develop, then that would make more sense to me. It's an experiment.
Dr. Mike has added, we are the study of an advanced intelligence working on its PhD.
I don't want to take that test.
You know, thinking about these different things, and if alien life, or maybe if we're not from God, are we from the child of God, which is its whole different thing. I'm reminded of a lot of the things in the book of Genesis, which, you know, is a long running, you know, I'm trying to think of the words to use. My vocabulary is not good right now, but in the book of Genesis, they describe God as walking around the Garden of Eden of Adam and Eve, hiding from God. And it makes me think about a different, more alien being that could have had a hand in these early humans, these perhaps servants and things like that, and how it might have developed into a story and a myth that was told and retold and retold. That's always been an interesting idea to me, and I think it fits into this idea that are we being observed? Sure. And were we placed here? Another interesting idea.
Well, we have those gaps in human development. I forgot exactly what age those were. I had it written down somewhere, where we're going along, and then all of a sudden we make this huge jump.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. I don't remember the Latin, but the Vatican said this. There's no jumps in nature. And when the Vatican astronomer, the head astronomer, was talking about aliens, this was in like 2000, 2002, he said he was on an Italian talk show, and he said aliens exist. And his reason was that nature makes no jumps. And that was a very interesting comment for that person to make. I mean, it caught a lot of attention at the time.
You know, Audra said in the chat that Made in His Image has always fascinated her. And she said she tried to talk to her grandma about Jesus being an alien, but she just laughed. And I have said for many years that I think the whole notion of the God word was an alien. I mean, Jesus being conceived by an alien birth, virgin birth, and then along comes Muhammad or whomever, and that these were drop-ins. That's a thought that has stuck with me for years and years, that at these very important critical moments in time, and then how do people in the church and so on, you know, politicians, mm-hmm. need to spin that to have control of people. So it was just a thought, you know.
Powerful implications to those ideas, but, you know, it's a very fascinating thought.
If you go way back and you look at religions, some of the religion or some of the, you know, some of the religious beliefs developed from there's always this concept of whatever, the creator's coming from the sky and whatever. Well, yep. You know, religion was used to was a social tool or to control people.
Yep.
If I am close to that person, then I must be in charge. And it was really more of a social construct at one point than in the very beginning than true beliefs. And then, of course, it's changed over thousands of years, and in a lot of different ways. I mean, you would think it should always be good, but we fought a lot of wars over religion.
Mm.
So, you know,
do you think that even, let's say, pre-Christianity, during the time of the pyramids, which the pyramids are a lot older than previously speculated, but let's say during the time of the pharaohs and so on, do you believe that there was a coexistence with aliens, or that being a thought?
I think they were here. I definitely think they were here. We were talking about that the other day, and you know, just some of the things you see that are so consistent around the world at that point in time, how could they be?
Mm-hmm.
I think we had help, and I don't. And then there's the question again: why? Why would they want to help us? To study what's going to happen, or to see how we would react? That's an experiment. So,
right. Or were they helping us, or were they using us? Were we building these things for them? You know.
But. Well, I don't even know why I'm going to say this. I heard stories that I didn't write. I didn't write down, because when I wrote stuff, I got enough pushback from people, even the government, believe it or not. I never thought I'd write something and the government would come after me. But I heard stories that defined each of us, not each one of us, but all the different people in the world, the different types of people, why they're here, when they came. You know, and it was very, very interesting. And it's like, where did you get this? And they said, well, you know, we've heard things. We've read reports that people have written. We don't know if we believe it ourselves. But it's almost like some of us were intended to do this, and some of us were intended to do that, or some of us were an upgrade from here, or whatever, which then over time all became kind of mashed together. And we came more as like a one species.
Yeah, that's a very interesting idea. I like that.
And these guys were very serious. I mean, I talked to some people, you would never think they would even have anything to say like this, but they wouldn't unless you really got to know them and they trusted you. And I think, you know, there's a couple of them who lived this for years. There's a saying in the intelligence community, a lifetime of silence behind the green door.
Mm.
And that means once you know something, you don't say anything.
Mm.
So when they had a chance to talk to somebody who they felt they could talk to, and I never said anything, I wasn't given permission, or I didn't say, yeah, go ahead and say that, as long as you don't use our names. And, of course, some of the things I said, you know what they said to me was, nobody's going to believe you anyway. Go ahead, say what you want. except apparently somebody in the government, we hit a nerve somewhere, and we're not happy.
I really do hope that we are on the cusp of understanding, or the cusp of connection. I know that we very well could be. There's a part of me that thinks that we're not as far along as we think, but the other part of me says we're right there. And I hope that within my lifetime we can figure some of this out. But, you know, this has just been a fascinating discussion, and I've been able to kind of sit back and really absorb it a lot tonight. So thank you for that. But we are coming up to that point. I think we got a few minutes left. But, you know, as we kind of tie all this together, a lot of stuff we've talked about, are there any last thoughts or last ideas you want to leave everybody with on this topic?
Well, you know, I heard something once, and I don't know what I would say. If you were to meet a real alien, if they came down, they landed right in your backyard, or they right there, you knew it was, what's the first thing you'd ask them?
Can we go home?
You got room on that ship?
Yeah. What is the first thing that you might ask them? I mean, I don't know. I got a lot of questions. That would be one of my final thoughts is, well, you know, why are you here?
Yeah.
Who are you? You know, where'd you come from? You know, all that stuff would be,
I can only think about it. I would want to know about where did they originate from. Do they know their development? Do they know the history of, you know, our planet in depth? I'd love to know that. But how long have they been observing? How many millions of years, perhaps? But, you know, when you talk about a species that can travel intergalactically, that harnesses that energy to bend space-time, you know, the sky's the limit.
Well, I was reading something the other day and it said, if they're 100 years ahead of us, that's really amazing.
Mm.
If they're 500 years ahead of us, we have no chance of ever really probably catching up to them. But the other question is, do you really think we'll make it? Do you think we as a species will continue on? And for how long? I don't know. Sometimes I see things, I'm saying, you know, we're not going to make it. We got to either straighten out or we're not going to make it. But, you know, I don't know.
So a couple of people have asked questions. I know we're short of time here, but I don't understand this question, but maybe you do, Rick. Kevin's asked if you've had any blowback from the general atomics electromagnetic systems regarding your research on railguns.
No. Okay. Everybody pretty much knows the railguns and you know, how they work. You know what I think we did that they got, and I don't think it was the alien stuff because nobody believes it. I think we talked about, I don't know if you remember this in the book, we talked about the spider web, the electromagnetic field around the Earth.
Yeah.
That was being used, that like a spider web, that we were looking at technology where if something happened, if Russia did something on the other end of the world and just tapped that electromagnetic field, we would know immediately over here. And that was something that may have come out of HARP. And now it's not such a big deal because I've heard people talk about it. But 4 years ago, we think maybe we pushed that one a little bit too far when we talked about that particular thing.
Mm.
How the
Damien has asked, can somebody hit you up with more questions and how?
Sure, they can send me an email if they want. FinalRevelationSun@AOL.com.
Okay.
All right. Well, this has just been a lot to take in. I'm still mulling over some of the questions in my mind, and if you hear me just go silent for a moment there, it's because I'm thinking about all the different provocative implications of all this. But it is that time of the evening. And, you know, this is always a pleasure with you, Dr. Rick. I always look forward to these conversations. And, you know, we got a bit of a bonus. We had a little kerfluffle last week, but that turned into a great conversation. And now we get to talk to you, Dr. Rick, 2 weeks in a row. So thank you very much for that.
I really appreciate you. And you let me come on and just ramble.
Oh.
And I do want to tell Audra to watch out for those RH guys. you know, them and hockey players. You just can't be too sure.
Oh, sound like a bunch of Canadians to me. And, you know, we also have a big holiday in the United States coming up. I want to wish everybody a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Canadians, they just call it Thursday. But, you know, for the rest of us, you know, real human beings in America, we're going to be having a great time tomorrow. So I hope you have a good time with your family. But, yeah, we're coming to a close. Dr. Rick, you know, appreciate you again. Any last comments before we sign off?
No, I think I said enough.
Well, I appreciate what you did. And Dr. Vicky, any last thoughts?
Oh, sure. Don't let them push you around out there, people, especially the aliens.
Oh, you got to watch out for them aliens. But
invite them in for tea.
There you go.
That's a good idea right there. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a good time tomorrow. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.